Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. And find out more about the figure of St. Paul. That's with a scripture scholar. He's the Archbishop of Canberra, Australia, Mark Coleridge.
Saul was his Semitic name. Paul was the Roman name that he had from day one. He would have used Paul when he went to school or out into the marketplace. Saul would have been the name used at home. Now, we are dealing with one of the most vivid and overwhelming characters of the New Testament. He leaps off the page at you, like Jeremiah in the Old Testament. And this is amazing in an ancient world that didn't value personality and individuality as we do. Well, this is personality with a capital P. Who was he? He was a diaspora Jew of wealthy background. How do we know he was from a wealthy background? Two reasons. One, he was highly educated. And education tends to be always the privilege of the better off. And we also know that his parents were Roman citizens. Well, the only way that diaspora Jews could become Roman citizens was to pay a lot of money. So Paul was not one of your urban poor. He was from an urban, well-off background and born into a city that was renowned as a cultural and academic centre. At an early age, he went to Jerusalem to pursue his Pharisaic, his religious studies. Probably lived with relatives in Jerusalem. He becomes a well-known and respected figure as he grows older, and eventually he tells us he persecuted the Christians, so zealous was he for the faith of his ancestors. Then comes the fateful moment on the road to Damascus. What that moment was is hard to say, and Paul will spend the rest of his life unpacking the answer to the question, what does it mean, this overwhelming encounter with Jesus who came at him like a tidal wave? So overwhelming is the experience of encounter with Jesus, the one whom he had persecuted, that he goes off into the desert for 2 years or thereabouts. He calls it Arabia, but it's the desert area south of Damascus in modern-day Jordan. What was he doing? He doesn't tell us. But we can guess that he was simply grappling with the question, what does this mean, this experience of encounter? And the rest of his life will give his answer to that question. We then know for a fact that he went to Jerusalem for 2 weeks, he says, to exchange information with Peter. From Peter he needed to hear about Jesus because Paul had never met Jesus face to face. Peter also needed to hear from Paul, because there were all kinds of stories circulating about Paul. There always were. So Paul had to say, now listen to me, not them. So 2 weeks in Jerusalem, and then they agree that he should go home to Tarsus, strategic withdrawal for the time being. But in fact, he's back in Tarsus, it seems, for about 7 years. And it's Barnabas, whom we met last time, who brings Paul back onto the stage to the point where Paul becomes a member of that first ever missionary team, but not the leader. Then there's the big split with Barnabas and with Peter, it must be said, the brawl in Antioch over that issue of how Jewish and Gentile Christians should relate to each other. At this point, Paul has to make a big decision. Does he just go home, say it's all a bad joke, or what? He decides, in fact, not to go home, but to set up his own independent missionary team. And at this point, you can hear them howling in the background. Sore loser, megalomaniac, empire builder, false apostle, and these were the cries that would dog Paul throughout his apostolic career. The independent mission will take him into Europe because Paul regards himself as called to go where no one else has gone. So he crosses the Hellespont from Asia into Europe, and there he begins a life of constant journeying, ceaseless travelling, but also ceaseless suffering. In fact, Paul's apostolic career is so much a story of suffering that you've got to ask, why didn't he at some point just pack up and go home, give it all up? The answer is strange and wonderful. And it's that Paul comes to see that the very thing that should destroy him, like persecution, like imprisonment, are the things that are strangely giving his mission power, giving life to him as an apostle. So he sees that his whole ministry and career are like the death of Jesus. It should have been the end, but it was the beginning. It should have destroyed Jesus, but it had the opposite effect. So Paul comes to see that the wound becomes a fountain. And that's the key to understanding him and why he didn't go home. All of his journeying leads to his beheading down in what's called Tre Fontane, here in Rome. And then he is taken by his disciples, the Christians of Rome, and buried not too far away. And once again, as with Peter, they put over his grave a huge and magnificent basilica, San Paolo fuori le mura, which simply spells out the magnificence of the witness that Paul gave, not only in life, but more particularly in death. What we see too is that in his death he finds his way to Peter, and that's why they're so often represented together. Here in Rome you will never see Peter without Paul, and you'll never see Paul without Peter, because in their martyrdom, in this one city, they find their way to each other completely, because they find their way completely to Jesus. So, you and I presume that you, like myself, were not born Jewish. Insofar as that is true, we are all, in a very strict sense, sons and daughters of St. Paul, sons and daughters of the great Gentile mission, which in the face of all opposition, he pursued through life and beyond death.
Our thanks there to Scripture Scholar, Archbishop of Canberra, Australia, Mark Coleridge. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.